Hello, I'm Donovan Kane. Welcome back to the Steamy Stories for Women podcast. On this segment, you'll hear Chapter 2 of His Angel, written by Samantha A. Cole. If you haven't listened to Chapter 1, you'll want to do that first. And if you have listened to Chapter 1 and you're here, that means you liked it. And I'm glad you did. If you enjoy Chapter 2 of His Angel, written by Samantha A. Cole, you can listen to the rest of this steamy romance novel by visiting my website at steamystoriesforwomen.com. Join the Phoenix Club, and you'll have access to the rest of this novel, along with a new steamy novel every month, written by some of the best authors in the genre. And now, Chapter 2 of His Angel, written by USA Today bestselling author Samantha A. Cole, and read by, well, me. I hope you like it. Chapter 2. Angie sat across from her best friend, Jimmy, as they ate at a New Mexican restaurant she'd been dying to try. They continued to catch up with each other, and she wished his visit didn't have to be so short. While they'd both been raised in upstate New York, after high school graduation, she'd attended college in Florida, while he had got into the Marines. 6 years later, he'd been recruited by the DEA and had to change his last name for safety reasons. He now worked in their Atlanta office. At least, she didn't have to worry about his job as much as she used to, since he was no longer working deep undercover assignments. Those had kept them from seeing or talking over the phone to each other for months at a time. Now he worked with a team who backed up the undercover guys, but he still had his beard and long hair, which she hated, but knew was necessary. He was a good-looking guy when his facial hair was trimmed close, but without it, the man was an absolute hunk, and had been since she first met him their freshman year of high school. They tried dating once in their sophomore year, but it didn't last long because both of them were afraid to ruin the strong friendship which had developed between them. He did, however, take her to their senior prom after she broke up with the guy she'd been seeing a month earlier. Now the two friends tended to bust chops about each other's dates, yet remained protective of each other. That was why she hadn't been surprised when Jimmy had made the veiled threat to Brody and his friends. Talk about hunks. While her best friend excused himself to use the restroom, Angie's mind drifted back to her new neighbor and his friends. To be more specific, one friend, Ian Sawyer. With his black hair, blue eyes, handsome face, and a sculpted body which made her panties wet, the man could be a movie star if he wanted to. Brody had told her Ian was retired from the Navy and owned the security consulting company Brody and the others worked for. Lately, she'd been thinking of having them upgrade her burglar alarm system. Jimmy always bugged her about how easy it was to bypass the one which had come with the home she'd purchased 3 years ago. She doubted the owner of the company would do it himself, but she often found herself fantasizing about him coming over and installing a new alarm. In her fantasies, he had on the tight, faded jeans and snug royal blue t-shirt he'd been wearing the first day she met him while he was helping his friend move in. The color of his shirt had made his eyes stand out to the point she was certain she could drown in them. And holy crap! His deep voice had sent shivers up and down her spine before settling between her legs. When Brody introduced her to his teammates, she thought Ian had held her hand a moment longer than the others, but it was probably wishful thinking on her part. "And I was thinking of dyeing my hair purple and getting a heart tattoo that says, 'Bite me' on my forehead." Angie shook the wayward thoughts from her brain and stared at Jimmy, who was laughing at her shocked expression. "Huh? What are you talking about?"
"I was wondering where you were. I sat back down and asked you a question, but you were on another planet. I wanted to see how long I could talk gibberish before you noticed." She threw a piece of tortilla chip at him.
"Jerk. What was the question?"
Tossing the wayward chip in his mouth, he chewed and swallowed before answering her. "How's work going? Any new clients?" Angie was a graphic designer who worked from home. She had several corporate clients who sent her a large amount of work, as well as many individual clients needing one-time only or occasional projects.
"I do have a new client, and I'm so excited about them. I've been contracted to be one of the designers of romance novel covers for a publishing company called Red Rose Books.
Really? That's awesome, Ange. How'd you hook up with them?
Grabbing her smartphone, she brought up a photo and showed it to him.
This was one I did for a former advertising client who's now writing romance books. She thought of me when she was self-publishing her first book and asked if I would design the cover for her. Someone from Red Rose saw it, thought it was edgy and something they'd be interested in, so they tracked me down. It's a great contract with a decent payout for each one I do. I'll be doing about one or two a week so I can still concentrate on my other customers.
Jimmy smiled at her. He was always her biggest supporter when it came to her art. Great. Mr. Abraham would be proud you've come this far.
Mr. Clark Abraham had been her high school art teacher and the first one to recognize the artistic talent even Angie hadn't known she had. He'd introduced her to the many different mediums of art and encouraged her to try them all until she found what fit her best. In addition to graphite pencil drawings and computerized graphic arts, she also dabbled in oil paintings and had sold several pieces at a local art gallery over the years. Thinking of the gray-haired man who'd become her friend and mentor was always bittersweet. He'd suffered a heart attack in his empty classroom during lunch period one afternoon the year after she graduated, and by the time someone found him, it had been too late.
Yeah, I know he would have.
Lowering her voice a few octaves, she imitated the old man.
Reds, Angie. Why are you so obsessed with reds? Throw some blue and green in there, maybe a little yellow. Surprise me sometimes, will you?
The two of them laughed as they finished their meal and talked about everything under the sun. Angie was going to miss her friend when he headed back to Atlanta tomorrow morning, but for now, she'd make the most of their time together.
Ian threw the pen down when he realized he'd been chewing on it and looked at the small brass anchor clock on the right side of his desk. His brother had an identical one, and both had been gifts from their mother when they finally had desks to put them on. He heaved a sigh in frustration because it was only 07:30. He had another half hour before Angie's boyfriend showed up and started answering the many questions Ian had for him. Before he left Brody's last night, he told the geek to find out everything he could about James Athos and call him as soon as he had it. In the meantime, Ian left a message with Carter to contact him ASAP, which, knowing his friend, it could be a while. He didn't have a direct line to get a hold of the guy. No one did, and had to leave a voicemail at the number he'd memorized years ago. Carter would check his messages only when it was safe for him to do so, which meant it could be hours or days before he got a chance, depending on what he was working on. The quiet in the company office he usually enjoyed was getting to him this morning. Standing, he headed outside for some fresh air with Beau following on his heels. He tossed and turned all night with thoughts of Angie doing erotic things to him, alternating with speculation of what her boyfriend wanted with Trident Security. Brody had called him a little before midnight with an update, brief as it was. He was able to get a copy of the 33-year-old's Georgia driver's license and found out he had some minor drug and assault arrests on file with no jail time served, all which could be part of an undercover persona, as Ian had a feeling it was. The interesting part was, prior to 9 years ago, James Athos didn't exist, and Ian wondered how well Angie knew her boyfriend. Pushing on the office entrance door, he stepped outside, inhaled deeply, and looked around. From the outside, the complex looked like what it had formerly been, an abandoned warehouse facility on the outskirts of Tampa. Over 3 years earlier, when he first saw the property, Ian knew it would be a perfect compound for Trident Security. The company he co-owned with his brother specialized in personal security, investigations, and the more than occasional black op for Uncle Sam. The complex was once used by an import-export company until the authorities had discovered the main product being processed through there had been cocaine. After the business shut down, Ian was able to purchase the 10-acre lot of land at a government auction for a fraction of its estimated value. The property contained four identical two-story warehouses lined in a row and was pretty much isolated from everyday traffic, setting a good mile away from the main thoroughfare. With a mini forest of trees between the buildings and highway, it was afforded a great deal of privacy. After extensive renovations, the smallest and last of the warehouses on the property had become the living quarters for both Sawyer brothers. Ian's 3,000-square-foot, three-bedroom apartment was on the first floor, while stairs led up to Devin and Kristen's place, which had an identical floor plan. The remaining 6,000 square feet of the warehouse behind the two apartments was being used as storage, but that was going to change when they added two new apartments. One would belong to Ian's goddaughter, and the other was for Nick, the youngest of the Sawyer clan and current Navy SEAL based in California. It would be his for when he visited and eventually retired from the military. Glancing over at the main gate, Ian waved hello to the morning guard while Bo sniffed along the compound's fence line. When a person entered the compound through a manned security gate, the first warehouse they came to was home to the Covenant, a club which catered to those who enjoyed some kink in their lives. This was another reason why the property had been ideal for them. A few years earlier, their cousin Mitch approached the brothers with the idea around the same time they were trying to get Trident Security off the ground. The exclusive club they all belonged to prior to that had closed down after the owner was indicted for tax evasion. The closing had left the members searching for a new place where they could practice their individual sexual fetishes without them becoming public knowledge. Since Ian and Devin were focused on Trident, Mitch, with his MBA, was the obvious choice to manage the club. There were times, however, his cousin deferred to Ian on some issues since he was the more experienced dom. To get from the first warehouse to the remaining three in the compound, visitors had to pass through another security gate which was unmanned. To get through that one, a person had to be either buzzed in or scan their handprint on the sophisticated identification system. The first of those buildings, which Ian was now standing in front of, was separated in two areas with the main offices of Trident Security at the front. At the back end was a large vehicle garage along with equipment, weapon, and ammunition vaults. The next structure contained an indoor shooting range, a gym and training room, and a panic security room in case of an emergency. Some might call the Sawyer brothers paranoid, but one never knew when one's enemies might come calling, so it was always better to be prepared. In fact, several months ago, the team had almost been picked off by a sniper who'd set up in a tree just past the security system's line of detection. As a result, Ian and Devin were working on acquiring several undeveloped properties surrounding theirs so they could extend their lines of defense outward. Ian picked up the hard rubber ball Bo had dropped at his feet and played fetch for about 10 minutes until Devin strolled over to greet him, a cup of coffee in his hand.
Morning. Brody find out anything?
He filled his brother in as he threw Bo's ball one more time before turning around and walking back inside to his office. Stopping along the way in their break room, he grabbed his third cup of coffee of the morning and a blueberry muffin from a Tupperware container. The leftover muffins from yesterday were courtesy of Mrs. Kemple, their office manager since the inception of Trident Security. She'd resigned and moved to Miami to help her daughter with newborn triplets last summer after training a new manager. Unfortunately, her replacement, Paula Layton, had become too nosy for her own good, and was fired 3 weeks ago after Brody found her one morning looking through files in the team's war room. It was one of the few places which she knew damn well she wasn't supposed to have access to. He'd run over to the club to help Mitch with a computer glitch and left his office door open, thinking he would be right back. After he was gone longer than expected, Paula's curiosity must have gotten the best of her because when Brody returned, she was standing in his war room with her nose in one of his files. Ian had fired her that day. Marco had been the most relieved about the woman's termination, since she'd seemed to have her eye on him for a relationship which went beyond co-workers, and the man had not been interested at all. Mrs. Kemple had come back for a short time to train Colleen McKinley, a submissive from the club. When Ian had been talking to Colleen's dom, Master Reggie Helm, a few hours after firing Paula, the dom mentioned his sub wasn't happy with her current job and was looking for a change. Ian brought her in for an interview the next day and hired her on the spot. The only problem they faced with Colleen so far was getting her to call them all by their first names and not Master or Sir while at the office. It also took the guys a little getting used to seeing her in something other than the lingerie her dom liked her to wear at the club. Her clothes tended to be quite conservative and professional-looking at work.
At least they didn't have to hide from Colleen the fact that Trident Security was run by and employed a group of dominants, like they had with Paula. Mrs. Kemple had known about the club since it opened and never batted an eye over it. 5 minutes before 8, Ian's phone rang. It was the guard at the front gate advising him he was buzzing one James Athos through the second gate. Brody, who'd come in a few minutes ago, stood and went to the front door to escort the man in while Ian and Devin remained in the conference room. Ian would have preferred to have this meeting after he spoke with Carter, but the spy hadn't gotten back to him yet. Brody walked back in with Athos right behind him, and both men took seats at the table. Ian wasn't in the mood to offer Athos coffee or anything else, and apparently neither was his brother, who also remained silent. "I'm sure you investigated me last night and are frustrated with what you found, and, more importantly, what you didn't find. Did Carter return your call yet? Because I know that's the first thing you did after I left." Athos leaned back in his chair and rested one ankle on the opposite knee as if he didn't have a care in the world, but Ian knew it wasn't the case. The man had something on his mind and was worried about it. Ian tapped his hand on the table. "No, he didn't. Now instead of me asking you the 101 questions I have, why don't you start from the beginning and tell us what you want?" "As I'm sure you figured out, Athos isn't my last name. There are only two people in this world who can conclusively connect me to the man I was 9 years ago. One is Angie, and the other is my handler at the DEA in Atlanta." Ian raised his eyebrow, but said nothing. Neither did Devin nor Brady, but the geek jumped onto his laptop, presumably getting the number to the Atlanta office. "I was recruited from the Marines after a 6-year stint, 4 of which were spent in Special Forces. I was given a new identity, and my military record was expunged. Spent my first 3 years undercover with a biker gang out in Arizona and New Mexico who were running a lucrative cocaine business from over the border. Took me a while to work my way up the ladder, but after a long investigation, we were able to shut down the pipeline. But as you know, you shut down one of those fuckers, 3 more pop up. From there, I worked my way around the states until I got tired of living under rocks with the scum of the earth. My handler, who was also my recruiter, pulled me in, and I've been working with the support team out of the Atlanta office for the past 2 years. Again, it was under a new identity. As far as anyone at the DEA knows, my last name is Austin. One of the advantages of coming in was I'm able to see and talk to Angie almost any time I want to, but I still keep my connection to her a secret from my coworkers." Ian held up his hand to interrupt. Athos' statement from yesterday was still eating away at his gut. "Angie means the world to me." "Who is she to you?" The man's hard face softened. "I told you yesterday, she's my world. She is and always will be. We met our freshman year of high school and clicked right away. She's been my best friend ever since. If it wasn't for her, I would have fallen apart years ago after my mother and baby sister were murdered by a drug dealer whom I didn't know my sister got herself mixed up with. It was while I was still in the Marines and overseas. I would have hunted the bastard down and killed him myself if the cops hadn't already done it before I got home. Angie was my rock, my savior, and she's the only family member I have now, and I'm all she has. Her folks were older when they had her, and both of them died several months apart of natural causes in their late 50s. She had a much older brother who was killed in a car accident when she was 9, and I think that's what eventually killed her folks, because neither of them ever got over it. Anyway, we've always been there for each other over the years, and it would destroy me if anything ever happened to her because of me. You went into the DEA as a way to avenge your sister and mother's deaths." Ian didn't ask it as a question, and Athos didn't deny it. "So where do we fit in?" "Before Angie closed on her house 3 years ago, I did what I always do when it comes to her and ran a check on all her neighbors." He shrugged. Even though some of the inquiries he'd made were technically illegal, he didn't seem ashamed to admit it in front of men who most likely would have done the exact same thing. "When she mentioned Evans moved in next door, I checked him out too. I saw his connection to Trident Security and remembered Carter mentioning the name one night a few years ago.
He'd said if I ever need help with anything in Tampa or the rest of Florida, I should contact Trident and you guys would get it done. Just to make sure things hadn't changed, I got in touch with him again and he told me he trusted you guys with his life. I've known the man for over 7 years. He saved my sorry ass twice, and so it was a good enough endorsement for me. His voice became hard again and filled with venom. Ian could see the barely contained rage in his eyes. 2 weeks ago, an undercover agent, Aaron Reinhardt, working in New Orleans, was tortured and killed. We have no idea how he was made, if they broke him or not. I saw the crime scene photos and wouldn't be surprised if the guy did crack. Most agents would have. The worst part is his parents and brother were found dead with him. Their bodies were discovered before anyone ever reported them missing, dumped next to a garbage bin behind a strip mall near their family home in Illinois. Small consolation, his family wasn't tortured, but each was shot once in the back of the head. Like most undercover agents, Aaron's next of kin was only available to his handler. We both had the same handler, Artie Giles, and both trusted him with the information. I still do. Whoever found out about his family, it didn't come from Artie. Aaron was a friend of mine. It was obvious Athos had respected the dead man. I worked with him on and off for years. He was one of the good guys, and this was supposed to be his last undercover because he'd gotten to the point where he wanted to meet a nice girl and settle down. When we found out what happened, I told Artie I wanted the job. I maintained and updated my cover, which I cultivated over the years, in case I ever needed it again. I'm heading to New Orleans after I leave here today to start working my way under. I told Angie last night after dinner, and right now she's really pissed at me, although I can't blame her. I'd sworn to her that I was done with undercover work, but this is something I need to do. I can't let the bastards win. He leaned forward and set his elbows on the conference table. So this is where you all come in. I need you to keep an eye on her for me without her knowing it. If she finds out, she'll be pissed off enough to fight any attempts to protect her and end up getting herself hurt or killed. She's smart, but stubborn at times, and I'm worried if my cover gets blown, someone could come after her to get to me. Like I said, though, it's highly unlikely because Artie is the only one who can make the connection between the two of us. His files are kept in a safe at his home office, and the name Athos and my birth surname don't appear anywhere in my file, and neither does Angie's name. There's only her cell phone listed along with a passphrase he has to say to verify it's him who's calling her. They're also on two separate papers, so if someone gets into his safe somehow, the two don't appear related. Neither of them have met nor spoken on the phone. If anyone claiming to be from the DEA contacts her without that phrase, she has instructions on how to disappear without a trace until I can catch up with her. No one else in the agency knows she exists in my life. As far as you know, nothing is ever 100% hidden, Ian said wryly. True. The agent nodded his head in reluctant agreement. But I've been as careful as possible over the years. Hell, I've spent a small fortune on burner phones because I destroyed each one after I called her. I still do, even though I'm no longer under. I don't want something or someone from one of my past gigs to come back and bite me on the ass. Athos was about to say something more, but Ian's cell phone rang. He glanced at the screen and then at Angie's friend before hitting the speaker button to connect the call. A deep voice rumbled over the line. Ian, you rang? Sorry I couldn't get back to you sooner. What's up? He leaned forward so he could be heard without raising his voice. No problem, Carter. Seems I have an acquaintance of yours sitting in my office with Devin and Brody. The sounds of traffic in the background came through the speaker. Really? Who? Ian arched his eyebrow at the DEA agent, indicating he should announce himself. Hey, man, it's Athos. There was a 2-second pause. Confirm. Tinkerbell gives good head. While the other three men smirked and shook their heads at the insane passphrase, Carter barked out a laugh. Long time no here, dude. How's it hanging? Have you shaved the bush yet? An amused snort escaped Athos. A little low lately, and no, I haven't. Ian, all is good. I trust this scruffy-faced jackass as much as I trust you, and you know that's a lot. He loves his alphabet soup at 0400, and whatever he says is on the level.
Alphabet soup was a reference to the multiple abbreviated government agencies in the U.S., and at 0400, signified the fourth letter of the alphabet, which was D. It was as close to saying DEA as a spy would get over the phone. As Athos said earlier, Carter's endorsement was all Ian needed.
"Do you need anything else? I've only got a minute."
In a reflexive reaction, Ian shook his head and said no at the same time.
"All right, cool. Hey, man, you take care of yourself. If you need anything, ring me up. It's been a long time since you and I raised hell together. Devil Dog, tell your pretty fiancé I'll be in Tampa in a few weeks, and I'm looking forward to being reintroduced to the little librarian."
While Brody and Ian gave him curious looks, Devin chuckled. There was a story there they weren't privy to, but they had a good idea what it might be. Master Carter was known to take the third spot in an occasional menage when visiting the Covenant.
"I'll tell her. I'm sure she'll be looking forward to it, too. Hey, how'd you know we got engaged? You haven't been here in months."
"The almighty Carter knows all. I gotta go. Catch y'all later."
The connection dropped, and Ian looked at Devin and Brody, who both nodded their silent approval, and then at Athos.
"Give us the details."
I hope you enjoyed the first two chapters of His Angel, written by USA Today best-selling author Samantha A. Cole. If you would like to continue listening to this steamy novel written by Samantha A. Cole, you can do so by visiting my website at steamystoriesforwomen.com. Join the Phoenix Club by clicking on the link, and not only will you get to finish this steamy novel, but you'll get access to a new steamy novel every month, written by some of the best authors in the genre. SteamyStoriesForWomen.com. I hope to see you there soon. Send me a message at the end of the page, on the short form. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear what you think of the program.